So the big question is this: how are real estate investors who don't have a ton of free time, don't have access to off-market deals, and didn't start life on third base, how do we grow a real estate business conservatively to support our families, finally leave the corporate rat race, and build a legacy? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answers. I'm Ed Matthews, and this is Real Estate Underground.
This is the Real Estate Underground podcast show number 47.
Hello, everybody. Ed Matthews here with the Real Estate Underground podcast. Thank you for joining us today. I am really excited about this. This guest, Margaret Kozlark, I'm going to introduce her in a second, but the reason I'm so excited about this is not only, so the new relationship for me, to be honest, in full disclosure, we met a couple of months ago, and I tend to be a stalker when it comes to meeting new people. And so I got on her website, checked out her social media, and realized she's really smart. And so not only is she really smart, but I've actually, and in full disclosure, we're creating our own website right now. And I may have modeled mine after yours just a little bit. Anyway, Margaret, thank you so much for joining us today. Margaret is with Noble Investments, and I am so excited to meet you. And actually, in the background, also, we've joined the same mastermind. So that's another.
That's true. We have. Yeah. So welcome great to see show. You, Ed. Yes.
Yeah. Welcome to the show. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah. So you and I got to meet each other at Brendan Chisholm's meetup over in Fairfield County here in Connecticut. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we got to shoot the breeze a little bit and talk about our various businesses. One of the things that I've learned is that when it comes to my business and looking at your business, I always say on the show that we're all reading the same book, but some people are a few chapters ahead of others, right? And I feel like I'm on about chapter 5 and you're on 26. So I'm also really excited to meet you because you've accomplished a lot in a relatively short period of time. So congratulations for that. So for those out there who don't know who you are and who your firm is, who is NobleVest? And then let's go from there.
Sure. I would love to. Before I tell you a little bit about NobleVest, I just want to say that I took the traditional route that we've all been told to do. I went to school, I got good grades, I got a college degree, got a corporate job, worked myself up to the corner office, was making great money, but had zero work-life balance, was really unhappy, really out of shape, was not even moving. Right. And I just realized there has to be another way. Yep. And so I started investing passively, and I'll tell you in a second how I found out about that, about 6 years ago now. And at the time, I had never heard of syndication. And full disclosure, I've never even been a landlord. I went straight from corporate job to passive investing. I sort of skipped over the active landlord part that I know a lot of people do. But yeah, exactly. And it's a great way to go, you know, but I had no time. I had that corporate job. I had three kids. Life was pretty busy. I needed more time, not something to like occupy more of it. But I did that passively for several years. And I realized what an amazing vehicle it was, both for getting me great passive income, but also just giving me my time back. And so what happened was I did that for several years. And then my friends and family started hearing about it. What is this you're doing? You're buying apartments? Wait, in Texas? Wait, what? What is this? And so they started saying, I want to know more about this. I want to do this. And so I actually had a smaller company called MGH Investments, named after my kids, Maeve, Grace, Henry, because those were my big why.
That's great.
And I was sort of doing just kind of small projects where I was kind of helping friends and family get access to these. Yep. But then, as always happens, and I am also, by the way, a residential real estate agent. And so, as anybody knows, the last couple of years were a crazy time for real estate. Yeah. So I had met a partner, my now partner, 2 years ago, and we had been talking all through the pandemic, and we just realized that our interests really aligned. And so, to make a long story short, we decided to form NobleVest. And so we are basically a boutique private equity firm, and we work with high net worth and busy W-2 professionals, helping to match them with opportunities so that they can get passive income, they can get tax savings, and more importantly, they can get freedom for their time to spend doing whatever else they'd like to do.
Thank you for that. And I'm curious, how do you define passive? The term passive gets thrown around the real estate world quite a bit, right? I mean, technically I'm a passive investor, but I'm also an active landlord, right? So, So for the folks out there, how do you define a passive investor versus an active investor?
Absolutely. So I would consider a landlord an active investor, right? So if you own a property and you are essentially responsible for the property management of the property, right? So you're getting those calls at 10 o'clock, my plumbing broke, or something's wrong with my dryer, got to collect, chase the tenants down to collect the rent, any of that, that to me are definite active activities. Versus on the flip side, with a passive investor, and it doesn't just have to be in large apartments, of course, you could have a passive investor for a duplex. Right. It's essentially somebody who helps provide the capital for the investment, but then doesn't do any of the heavy lifting. They pretty much sit back and we either have a property manager, or if it was something smaller, someone else is basically managing the day-to-day operations. Their role is strictly limited to a capital investment. So a true passive investment.
Okay. So I'd like to slice that a little further then. So then there is the concept within our world, the syndication and investment world, of general partner and limited partner in the roles, right? And yes. So I'm assuming a lot of, in fact, I'm pretty sure I know, the investments that you have been making over the years, were they as a limited partner and a general partner, both a little bit more?
Both. Okay. I definitely started as a limited partner, and I would encourage anybody, especially if you're looking to get into syndication, don't try to jump right into being a GP, because you really want to start as a limited partner for a couple of reasons. Number one, you can literally get that front row seat to watch and see how it works, but you can also work with a bunch of different operators to determine who you like, whose communication style, maybe they're very conservative with their underwriting, who could be a potential partner for when you decide to go the more active GP route. Mm-hmm. So I definitely started as an LP. And then since then, I have been a co-GP on several deals. And I've also been a fund manager, which we can talk about the fund of funds model on several deals as well.
Okay. Wow. You've worn a lot of hats. Let's take it a little higher for the moment. And then I want to get into the details. So as far as the asset class, real estate, right? And multifamily within real estate, obviously, you were market research, correct, as a career?
Yes, okay. Yes. I was a data geek. Yeah.
So, so I'm a techie geek. So
yeah, geeks unite.
Let the corporate geeks unite, right? You know, in terms of asset classes, right? I mean, obviously, you accomplished a lot in your corporate America career, mm-hmm. and I assume you were making very good money, and you probably could have done a lot of different things with that capital. You could have gone into venture capital. You could have invested in stock market or bonds or anything else, right? Art. Yeah. So what drew you to real estate as an asset class, and then multifamily beyond that?
A couple of things. Ever since I was a kid, always had an interest in real estate. Even though I didn't come from a real estate family, we used to play this game, my mom and I, where we'd drive around town and we would point out houses that had possibilities. That house has a possibility. Somebody should fix that up. And I just always, and the irony is I could have seen myself as a fix and flipper. I just didn't have the time to do it. But I always liked the idea of it. And a lot of the syndications that we do are value add syndications. So it's almost sort of like fix and flipping on a really bionic kind of scale, essentially. Yeah. So I liked it, but I also felt like as an asset class, everybody needs a place to live. At the end of the day, you know, we're providing one of the basic necessities of life. And if I can take a property that's a little bit tired and maybe run down and neglected, and I can fix the property up and make it a nicer living experience, then everybody wins. And it's really important for me that it's not just me and the investors that win. I want the tenants to win by getting a nicer place. I want the community to win by having the home values rise, because now we've got this nicer asset in the midst. So to me, I liked the win-win-win situation. Yeah.
And it's one of the things, as I learned more about you, I really came to admire about you, because, you know, you and I think similarly in that respect, in that our job number one is to create a clean and safe place for people to live, and then to upgrade it and enhance it so they're actually proud to live there. And one of the things you and I talked about at that meetup, at Brendan's meetup, was the idea of vacancy, right? The better experience your residents have, the longer they stay, and vacancy is one of our biggest expenses. So if you can defer that.
Yeah. It's so much easier to keep an existing tenant happy than to try to go find a new one and keep repeating that process every year, 100%.
So true. So true. And I learned that just from past property management experiences, having other property managers manage and turn, they were doing great in terms of their apartment turns and the fees they were charging us. But one of the things that I realized is that laying your head on the pillow with a clear conscience every night is really important. Right.
I'm so glad you said that 100%. Yeah, I feel very strongly about that. And I know affordable housing is becoming a big issue. So we're even looking at some housing funds to try to help our investors who are interested in really making a difference, kind of impact investing in that way as well.
It's interesting, you know, 2008, everybody talks about the home prices and how they dropped. One of the other devastating effects of that whole economic crisis was the general contractors that went away. All those GCs who were building affordable houses, whether it's single family homes or multifamily communities, a huge percentage of those GCs just went and did something else for a living.
Yeah. And that's what I keep telling people. Yes, we have inflation and yes, rents are rising, but at the heart of it, the problem is there's just not enough supply. And to your point, that's exactly right. We are so behind in terms of the number of houses that should have been built over the past several years to really provide enough homes for everyone.
Yeah.
And honestly, that's why multifamily is doing so well, right? Like there's not enough housing. So what do people do? They rent.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the state of Connecticut alone is last I read about 26,000 affordable housing units behind the U.S. as a whole.
Too.
Yeah. I saw in the journal, probably within the last month, that the U.S. total is like 3.8 million units.
I heard some, and I'm probably going to misquote it, but some insane stat that said something like we would have to be building homes like 36 hours a day, which obviously right. doesn't exist, to catch up for like the next 5 years right. to be able to even catch up to where we should be. So yeah.
Yeah, so we all have a lot of work to do. And there's a lot of states out there, and I don't know if this is something that you've looked at, but like state of Connecticut has an 830G program. And basically what that does is it allows you to work with the state. At the state level, you can acquire a residential property, like a farm or something like that. You can work with the state to have the state rezone that as a commercial zone. So then you can add, instead of buying 20 acres and putting four houses on it, you can buy those 20 acres and put 40 affordable units. The rub with the 830G is you have to commit to, I think it's a 40-year commitment where you have to provide affordable housing, the three levels of affordable housing, over to, I think it's 30% of the units must be some category of affordable housing.
I think that's smart. I think it's smart for them to look and develop programs like that because, yeah, we know the need is there.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of being able to incent folks like you and folks like me to come out and not only buy value added properties and make them at least a portion of them affordable, but also developers to come in and actually build ground up.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let's talk about your focus in multifamily. So obviously you could flip, you could have gone into multifamily and managed yourself. You chose the passive route, at least in the early stages. What drew you to the multifamily part of this business as opposed to the single family?
I think just because I was so fascinated by the thought of somebody like me, who is so solidly middle class, even being able to own an apartment. And I think that apartment complex, I should say. And I think it's a mindset thing, right? Because a lot of times when I'll talk to people about it, you know, it's getting a little bit better now. But I think everybody just assumed it was some shadowy corporation or some big giant conglomerate that owned these apartments. And they're really just people like you and me, Ed. Yeah. So I just found it so interesting. And again, having that corporate job for several years before I finally was able to stop, and then having three kids that I had to run around and take to all sorts of school events and practices, I just didn't think I had the bandwidth to be an active landlord. So this really appealed to me. And it was just a way to, again, make an impact on a big level. Right. But the other thing I also wanted to mention too is how I got started, which is, you know, so, okay, I had the mindset, okay, this sounds great. A colleague of mine had told me about this. She had a friend named Joe Fairless, which if anybody's in syndication will know that name. Joe is very big in syndication. And Joe was starting out and wanted to do this thing with apartments. And so she said, you should really get in on it. And I was like, I don't know. That sounds really complex. So I just sort of watched and I saw that they were making great returns. And I was like, okay, this sounds amazing. I'm going to jump in. So now mindset, I'm there. But again, three kids. By this point now, I'm a single mom. I don't have $50,000 lying around. And that's, of course, why a lot of people don't do syndication initially, because it is a pretty high barrier of entry.
Big dollars, right?
But what I did have, Ed, was I had the 401k from that corporate job. So here's this pool of money that so many of us have that we're really not doing anything with. And if you think about it, I'll just do a quick aside here. here's your retirement savings, right? So for those of us who went the corporate route, you go in and you pretty much just say, I want high risk, low risk, medium, usually depending on how old you are. And that's really it.
That's
and
it.
Then you put this huge responsibility for your retirement, your ability, quality of life and retirement into somebody's hands, right, at Fidelity. And you're just like, please God, I hope they know what they're doing. And sometimes they'll put them in mutual funds, right? Oh, mutual funds are so safe. If you look at your mutual fund statement, Ed, it is so many fees in there. Half the time they're getting transaction fees just for moving your money around.
Right.
So your mutual fund guy is making out great, but you might be losing anywhere from 30 to 40% of your returns to these fees.
Right.
So I knew there had to be a better way. I had this money just sitting there. So I converted it to a self-directed IRA, and that's how I started investing.
Okay. And so your first investment was with Joe or
with someone? It was with Joe. Yeah. My first several ones were with Joe. Okay. Yeah. It was a 297 unit complex outside of Dallas. And I put in $50,000 of my retirement money. And then 2.5 years later, I had gotten quarterly distributions. We had refinanced, we sold the property. And in that 2.5 years, my initial 50,000 had grown by another 28,000. So I came in at 50. 2.5 years later at 78, I'm like, I like this. I want to do this again.
Right.
So I just took that money and I rolled it right into the next deal and then just kind of kept doing that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with your approach. And that the fact is that when you buy a dollar's worth of stock, you are praying that, or a mutual fund, you're praying that the manager or the CEO of that company, they know what they're doing. And sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But real estate is tangible, right? I mean, there's so many things. You can touch it and you can affect the value of it in real ways very easily.
Yeah. And it's very transparent. You know, I love that there's webinars and all the pro formas. You can see the rent rolls and you can dig into the data as much as you want. I mean, it's very all out there. Maybe because it is regulated by the SEC. And so you really have to be very careful in making sure you're reviewing everything, of course, prior to making an investment. Ultimately, it's your own choice. But yeah.
Let's fast forward a little bit. So you've invested with Fairless. That's gone really well. I assume you did it again.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did you diversify or did you stay with that one syndicator? How did that
work? No, I also worked with passiveinvesting.com. Dan Hanford's another guy. I invested with a company called CB Capital out of Louisville. I'm in a short-term rental fund now. So I did diversify, but I would say probably for the first 5 years, I didn't diversify in the sense that I just stayed in the multifamily lane.
Yep.
It was usually like, that's what I want. I want at least 100 units, value add, Sunbelt, landlord friendly state, population growth, the whole thing.
Absolutely.
And it served me well. Only recently I started diverting into other asset classes.
Okay. So let's talk about the progression from limited partner to co and full on general partner. How'd you make that transition?
It was both scary, but super exciting too. So I had wanted to really get into really being more of an active management role. And as I mentioned, I had a lot of friends who were interested in this. And so I had another colleague, ironically, I mentioned a colleague of mine told me about this. So she told a company, we were a small company of maybe 20 people at the time, only myself and one other guy took her up on it. And we both loved it so much, we ended up both going into it full time. So this guy, his name is Iqbal, he ended up having a property. He moved to Texas for family reasons, but now he's boots on the ground. So he found this great property and was looking for general partners to help. You know, I've got a marketing background so we can help with asset management, which I'll just take a quick aside just to make sure that your listeners know. But when you are a co-GP, you cannot just raise capital. You have to do something else. You have to actively be involved in the asset management. Now, not being on site, I can't really walk the property, but we could do newsletters, we could do investor relations, help with website design, marketing, things like that. But if the SEC ever comes calling, you have to make sure that they see that you are an active member of the management team as well. So anyway, that was my quick aside. So I went into this deal. And it was really, it was such a learning experience because it was right before COVID. We bought the property. So fall of 2019. Okay, now here comes March 2020. The world literally shuts down.
Right.
And I don't care how conservative you are in your underwriting. No one had that on a line. Okay. Yeah. Nobody had pandemic. Boom. Right. So So that happened.
Shut down for 6 weeks. No, I did not plan for that.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, okay. Now COVID happens. Then there was a freak ice storm in Dallas. And so we had some damage from pipes bursting. Okay. That was a problem. Then there was like a tornado and like, I think part of a roof got damaged and we're like, what the heck else is going to happen for this crazy property? But here's the silver lining in the story, Ed. So first of all, it was a great one to start with because I learned a ton. But the really cool thing was despite the pandemic and the pipes bursting and the roof damage, all of this stuff, we were still able to exit early after 3 years, and our investors still made a 37% return. It was lower than our projections, but for us to make a profit, especially during a pandemic and all the other crazy stuff, we were just thrilled.
Yeah.
But that was a factor because we underwrote it so conservatively.
Right.
So we couldn't have predicted the pandemic, but because we were conservative in our estimates, nobody lost money on the deal, and we still made a decent return on it.
Which is the single most important thing, right? Is to make sure that not only are you providing a clean and safe place for your residents, but you're protecting your investor money.
You have to, absolutely. It's a very serious responsibility to be a fiduciary for someone else's money. And we take that very seriously, as we should.
Are you interested in real estate investing right here in Connecticut? Ever wonder where all those real estate investing pros hang out to network? Did you know the Connecticut Real Estate Investors Association will introduce you to those investors and will help you learn how to find deals, fund those deals, and even teach you how to do it without leaving your current job? Go to ctrea.com, that's ctreia.com, and click on the events button to register for an upcoming event. Hope to see you soon.
Buying investment real estate is both thrilling and sometimes stressful. Without a lending expert by your side, most investors don't stand a chance. That's where CT REIA Funding comes in. CT REIA Funding was founded by investors to help investors just like you fund their deals. Whether you're buying a single family rehab, an apartment building, or really any investment property, our team will understand your deal and help you close quickly. Go to ctreiafunding.com or call us at 860-876-0572.
I know that you and your partner have been very active. First off, you want to tell me about how you connected with your partner and how that relationship
developed? Yeah, sure. So this is kind of a crazy story too. Yeah. So as I mentioned, or you may have mentioned, I kind of grew up in the market research space. And my partner, she's a little younger than I, and her kids are a little younger. And she was feeling just the pinch, had that corporate job, again, making great money, but just was not happy. So she thought about doing real estate and literally went to LinkedIn and typed, you know, real estate investor. And because I was in the same industry, even though I didn't know her, we had so many common connections, I popped up to the top of the list. And she's in White Plains, New York, and I'm in Fairfield County. So she said, oh, we're close, and reached out, you know, and I said, yeah, let's get some coffee. And then that was shortly before the pandemic. So we literally talked for 2 years. We met a couple times outside, very social distanced and everything. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of really got to know each other through then. And we decided, you know what, let's go into business together. I had introduced her to a couple of syndications. She had invested passively, liked it. Mm-hmm. And so it really is true that when you have two sets of people work, or two sets of feet, or whatever the expression is, you can go so much farther than with just one. And I feel like the growth has been phenomenal just this past year. We've done a lot of really cool things together.
Excellent. And she's a food scientist, correct?
Yeah. So she was a food scientist at Unilever. And she could probably, I'll have her come on your show. She can tell you about it a bit more than I. But I know it had to do with everything from the tactile sensation of the food, as well as, of course, the smell, the taste, the variance of how much sugar, salt, whatever it is, sometimes the color. There's so much more to even just like making a Dorito chip than you would even imagine.
Part of me doesn't even want to know, because it's like the magician telling you how they do the trick.
Exactly. Right? Sometimes I don't want to look behind the curtain.
Right. So I'm sure, you know, over the years, you've had a lot of mentors and folks that have kind of given you some guidance along the way. And what was the best advice you ever got? And frankly, who gave it to you?
So there's a couple of things. First of all, I would have to start with my dad. He was just such a good ethical guy. And he was just always like, you're only as good as your word. So live life ethically, make the right decisions. Better if you're not sure about something to walk away. But once you lose respect or someone loses respect for you, it's very difficult to get it back. So just carry yourself like a good person. And that has always stayed with me. I really, whether it's work or home life, I want to be somebody who is out there doing good in the world. So that was one thing. And then from a business standpoint, it was just focus. Don't be the ADD of I got to do this and I can do that. Oh my gosh, this looks amazing. And so that's why it was purposeful as an LP. And even as a GP, initially, we're like, we're just going to stay in our lane. You know, we had very specific specs of what we were looking for, who our target markets was, the type of building, how old the building would be, because it's very easy in syndication to get dazzled, right? Someone, oh, this guy's got a car wash. He's doing golf courses. Oh my gosh, built to rent, short term. You could be like all over the place. And just stay with your asset class, at least to begin. Really feel like you can go deep and you know it, and then you can venture out. Right. So that would be the biggest advice, is just narrow and focus, and then before you grow.
Yeah, you meet these people, and I'm sure you have as well, where they've run 3 or 4 or 5 plus companies. And the thing that people, when they're just starting out, they don't realize is that person didn't start 5 companies at the same time. She started one company, perfected it, gave it to somebody else to manage, and then went and did the next company, and so on, rinse and repeat.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also, just in general with syndication, I feel it's important for me to let the investors know I've been an LP for years. Christine or I usually invest in every project with our investors. So we literally have skin in the game with them. And we are very protective of that investor experience because we've been there and we want to make sure we are communicating clearly. We're explaining the business plan. Everybody's getting their distributions on time, because I think that makes for a good relationship, which ultimately, hopefully, will be a long-term relationship. Because that goes back to your tenants, right? Easy to stay with a group of investors and just keep working with them versus to having to keep getting new ones.
Yeah. And going back to your father's exceptionally good advice, you know, integrity matters, right? Do what you say you're going to do, and then communicate, follow up, right?
Yeah. It sounds so simple when you say it like that, but a lot of people don't do it.
Almost all of them, right? And it's not their fault. I mean, life happens. But what the fact is that especially when you're dealing with someone's shelter or someone's money, you look them in the eye, you tell them what you're going to do, and then you deliver.
Yeah.
Right.
And related to that, a lot of people love the idea of it, but it's not uncommon that during the course of our conversation, for whatever reason, maybe they love the idea, but they might need the money in 2 years because their daughter is getting married or something. It's not uncommon that I'll say, I don't know that this is the right investment for you now. Right. Right. And I think that's really important too, because I want people to understand the parameters. There are a lot of upsides, but there are some considerations. There's the high cost of entry, but also it can be a 5-year hold. It's not like a stock market where you put something in and you can get it out the next day if you need it. So I want to make sure that people are going in with eyes open. Right. And I'm not afraid to say, maybe this isn't the right time for you, but let's keep in touch. And then down the road. And I think people appreciate that. I never sell. I don't think we have to sell.
Wholeheartedly agree. I mean, sometimes telling people no for whatever reason, right? But you know, when you're trying to do right by somebody and you tell them no or not yet, from a credibility perspective, it is probably one of the single most powerful things you can do, because instantly they know, okay, Margaret has my best interests at heart here. And that's a huge trust builder, like in terms of how I look at potential partners and folks that I work with, right?
It's funny because I'll talk to so many people even here at Keller, because my personal goal is to get more realtors investing in real estate. It's crazy that more realtors don't invest. But a lot of them will say, well, I like this idea, but I don't know, I can't really invest right away. And I'm like, listen, it took me 2 years to jump in. Just get your education. Just watch. Let me help you by giving you access to this. And I'd love to work with you if you want to. And if you don't, that's okay. At least you know what it's all about.
Yeah. The folks I meet along the way, I tell them, if you give me 20 minutes and if you buy me a cup of coffee, I'll tell you everything I know.
Why not?
Right. Why not? Because I had people that did that for me. Right. So, and it sounds like you did as well. So you mentioned education, and I'd like to talk with you about this because I know that we're similar personalities in this respect. Leaders are readers, right? And reading per se has changed over the years, right? Because now
you can consume audiobooks and real books and YouTube and podcasts and go to seminars and conferences and whatnot. So how do you consume information? How do you sharpen that saw of yours? And I'm curious what you're paying attention to these days.
All of the above, right? Part of it is life does, for whatever reason, it just runs faster. It really does. I think that when we were all young and pre-internet, if you're of a certain age as I am, but when I'm in the car, right? So my son goes to school in Easton. So it's about a 20 to 25 drive there every morning and back. I will, on the way there, I don't subject him to this. We do a little bit, but mostly we just chat about his day, what's going to go on. But as soon as I drop him off, it's usually podcasts on the way back, some kind of streaming thing. I'll do YouTube videos, just all sorts of things, just because here's a block of time and I'm in the car and I want to make the best of it. Yeah. When I'm at the gym, same thing, right? I'll be watching videos or podcasts or presentations. Or the good news is it's overwhelming, but there's so much out there that's available and it's free. Right. So you just have to figure out where you want to focus. But I will freely admit, I am a little old fashioned in that I do have a pile of paper books, hard copy books right there on my newsstand. There you go. Right. And the one I'm reading right now, is I'm always reading a couple at the same time, but the one I'm reading right now I love is Who Not How by Dan Sullivan. That's a great book. One.
Yep.
It's a really, really good one. Yep. I also like Never Split the Difference. Yep. Think and Grow Rich is probably my ultimate favorite. I love that one. Of course, Rich Dad Poor Dad, everybody.
The Purple Bible, of course.
Purple, exactly. Yeah, there's a lot of really, really great books out there. And so I would always say, even if you meet somebody and you like what they're doing, hey, Ed, what's on your nightstand? What are you reading? What do you recommend? I think you can learn a lot from people that way too. And just, I always love book recommendations for people.
Absolutely. I have this rule it's called the 3-foot rule. So if I'm consuming oxygen within 3 feet of another human being who also consumes oxygen, I'm going to do a couple of different things with them. First off, I'm going to introduce myself. Secondly, I'm going to talk to them about, hey, what are you reading? I'm just curious. What are you excited about? Which actually, Chris Morin, I stole that from Chris, our mutual.
I love that. I may have to steal it.
What are you excited about?
You.
And then the third thing, obviously, is I talk about real estate. And it's amazing what you find out about people when you just stand in line at Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks or whatever, and you know, strike up a conversation with them for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. It's amazing. Yeah.
I tend to get a little bit smarter every time. Right. And the thing is that like you were saying, it can be overwhelming in terms of consuming all that information. But, and I am a classic entrepreneurial ADD person, right?
We all are a little bit.
So next shiny thing, I'm always looking for the next thing. And the thing that I look for in the things that I consume, podcasts, books, whatever, is that one gold nugget, right? Make me smarter by one, give me one thing. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's great and I find a whole bunch of them, but I at least find one in everything that I'm doing. Maybe it's what not to do, but I'm still getting smarter, right? That's the idea.
Yeah. And I will say, we try to practice what we preach at Nobly Best too. So we've been doing like a monthly educational series of free webinars every month, anything from depreciation. We had somebody earlier this week talking about the difference between tax prep and tax planning, which is huge. We'll have things about different asset classes, what we see. You know, we did one on how COVID affected the market. I mean, just information. Because again, people need to just kind of make an informed decision. So if we can provide info, that's the best way to go.
Yeah. And the thing is that you're adding to that whole vast array of free information out there. And, but also I think you're creating awareness that you are a operator. And I always tend to judge people by the questions they ask and the information they provide. Right. And so when I see a webinar like yours, I get curious, and that tells me that that's something that you pay attention to, which adds to your credibility. Right. And over the course of time, as I pay attention to the other webinars you do and the talks like this one and all that, you start to realize, wow, Margaret and Christine, they really know what they're doing. They really pay attention to the details. It turns out they operate with integrity too. I think I want to learn more, right? Mm-hmm. That's the idea.
Well, that's the hope. And also, we are always still learning ourselves. It's not so much advice that anybody directly gave me, but I know it's been out there, but I definitely subscribe to the always be learning. I don't ever think I will ever have all the answers. You know, you said I'm on chapter 27. I think it's like a 200 chapter book, right? Like there's a lot more I still have to learn.
Yep. Yeah.
So we always want to keep educating ourselves as well.
I think it's what's the old techie term, adapt or die, right? And I don't, somebody asked me a while ago, you know, when do you think you'll retire? And I said, never.
ever.
I bore so easily that if I'm sitting there watching TV 4 hours a day, I'm cooked. So my grandfather always used to say, always present a moving target. Always. Right.
Yeah. And you know, what's funny related to that. And I actually suspect you're similar to me. I was having this conversation with my son. I cannot tell you the last time I have ever been bored. Like, there's always something to read. There's always something to do. I don't even know what it's like to be bored. I know that sounds really strange, but I'm always looking at and curious. And so,
that's the key word, right? It's curiosity. I think you're,
yeah,
people like you, and I hope me, are eternally curious, right? They're fascinated by different things. And yeah, whether it's real estate, human beings, what makes, yeah, somebody tick, whatever, right?
And I will say, I got that from my dad as well. And my mom was also a lovely person, but my dad was such a reader. Like, yeah, we were read, I feel like I was born with a book in my hand. And I appreciate that so much more as a parent when I realized how important and what a gift that was,
yeah,
of that curiosity and learning.
Yeah. I think it's also interesting that not only have you gone into an industry that is really hard to do and hard to do well for, but also before we got on, we were talking about this is a man's world, which we both immediately reject, right?
Yeah.
But the fact is that you and your partner have done extremely well. And I'm sitting here and I'm listening to your stories. And one of the things that keeps repeating in my head is, if you want something done and done well, ask a busy mom to do it.
Yeah, it's true. It's interesting too. And you're right, although it is getting better. But getting back to the realtor thing, it's so crazy to me that if you think about your typical real estate agent, they are definitely more likely to be female. There are, of course, male agents,
percentage, matter of fact. Yep.
Higher percentage of women. And yet when you get to real estate investing, it flips and then it's a higher percentage of men. And I never really understood that. And a funny story is, obviously, as we mentioned, Joe Fairless, who's huge now, but he does a conference every year. I've gone to his conferences 2 out of the 7 years,
ever.
6 out of the 7 years. I only, yeah, missed the first one. But year two, it was in Denver. And literally there were maybe, I don't know, I'm like counting 10 women, maybe out of like 200. I think I was like the only redhead. So I just remember they called a break. And again, you being a guy, you probably know this, but you won't come up with the answer as quickly as a woman would, which is when you have a break normally and you're a woman, you are trained, you move fast, you get to that ladies' room because there's going to be that line, you book, right? There's 10 of us. There was a line for the men's room snaking around the corner. And I was just like, wow.
Good times, good times.
Welcome to our world, boys, right? Like, that never happens, right?
That's
so, but I will say, but anyways, that was year two. And then when I just went back year seven, now just this past February, definitely it's more women. I would even say as much as 30 to 40%. So it's, yeah, definitely a lot more women are getting into the space, which is great, you know?
Which is necessary. I mean, as a gender, you are 52%+ of the world's population. So it would stand to reason, right?
I don't even know why it is. I know it was an old boys club for years, but I also think part of it is that there's so much math involved and people get freaked out about math. And I was always a numbers nerd. I never understood the math phobia. I love math, right? We literally do math games at home. Like, that's how geeky we all are.
You really are geeky, yeah.
But I totally get it. But so I think not having that fear, and again, coming from a research background, what's research? It's all statistics. It's all math, right? I think that's a big barrier for people. And yet, how many guys do you meet who maybe were in construction, maybe weren't great at math at all, but knew how to build a house and weren't afraid to just jump in?
Yep.
So I think it's all about a mindset and just whatever your skill is, taking action and trying.
It's got to be 37 different factors, right? Risk tolerances,
exactly,
comfort with math, and being able to not care what people think about you and,
yeah,
and all that.
Exactly.
But and like 34 other things. So Margaret, I've really enjoyed the conversation today. When you're not talking about real estate, what else do you like to do?
So when I am not talking about real estate, I am usually doing something outside. I'm such an outdoor junkie. I love to hike. I like to kayak. I ride my bike. I ski when it's winter. To me, being out in nature is so grounding. If I could just like live out in the woods somewhere and with great Wi-Fi and do this, I would be so happy.
Yeah, that's cute.
Exactly. So yeah, definitely doing something outside.
Okay, excellent. And if people want to learn more about you or get in touch with you or learn more about NobleVest or anything else you're working on, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
They can email me. My email is right here on the screen. It's Margaret at NobleVest. NobleVest.com. You can link in with me on LinkedIn. NobleVest also has a great Facebook page and an Instagram page. And we put a lot of content out there, usually 4 to 5 times a week. We're doing some kind of blogs or posts or reels or different educational things. So definitely go ahead and follow us there as well.
Excellent. Well, Margaret, as always, a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time today. I'm eternally grateful and looking forward to seeing you soon. I think we have another meeting in about a week and a half.
On Halloween, yeah.
Yeah, right?
So. Yes, no, it was great fun. And thank you so much for having me on.
This has been the Real Estate Underground Podcast, a Clark Street Capital presentation. Thanks for joining us. If you're enjoying the show, please remember to like and share it with your friends. Also, leave a comment if there's a topic you want us to cover. We read every comment. If you'd like to learn more about Clark Street Capital and our upcoming projects, please feel free to reach out to us and join our investor club at clarkst.com/join or join the Underground Insights newsletter at clarkst.com/newsletter. Until next time, happy investing.